This is special coverage from WBUR in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. He's a former senator from South Dakota, a decorated World War II veteran, and the Democratic Party's nominee for president in 1972. Today, George McGovern devotes his time to tackling one of the most intractable global problems, hunger. George McGovern believes that fighting world hunger is key to solving today's conflicts. In this hour, how he proposes to do it. First, an update on the refugee crisis in Afghanistan. The United Nations estimates that up to a quarter of the 24 million people in Afghanistan depend on international food aid. But with the gathering onset of winter and reports of looting, it's not clear that food will reach the people who need it. Earlier, I spoke with Yusuf Hassan. He's a spokesman for the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees in Islamabad. I asked him where there is greater need for assistance, in the refugee camps outside Afghanistan or inside the country.
I would say the needs are rather different. On the one hand, we have people who have the prospect of perhaps returning back if the security situation improves inside Afghanistan. Outside, we have people who are coming out of areas which continue to suffer from insecurity and uncertainty. And at the same time, we do need to focus on people who have been internally displaced and who are suffering because they have been cut off from assistance because of the conflict. Although we have been able to reach and assist those who have come from Afghanistan and fled to the neighboring countries, we continue to have problems in terms of access, in terms of security to many of those who have come to the tribal areas of Pakistan, for example. We have thousands of people who are stuck on border areas inside Afghanistan, surrounded by armed men, in the case of southern Afghanistan, the Taliban, and in some places, people who have been surrounded by the new advancing forces of the Northern Alliance, who come from ethnic groups other than the Northern Alliance.
What's the scale of need at this point?
The UN estimates that up to 6 million people do need urgent assistance inside Afghanistan. Outside, we believe that several thousand Afghan refugees who have fled would need assistance, but that assistance is there and would get to them as quickly as possible. But what we are worried about is those who are stuck inside Afghanistan, particularly people in areas that are not accessible and who in some few days' time will not be able to get any assistance because areas in which they are stuck would be cut off because of the snowfalls.
How have the rapidly changing military circumstances in Afghanistan changed access to people who need aid inside Afghanistan? Do you have better access now?
Not in the immediate term, because there's a lot of insecurity. We have not been able to supply many parts of Afghanistan from Pakistan, where we have huge stockpiles of food, because of the insecurity. For several days, trucks could not travel from Pakistan to Kabul. That has started in the last 2 days, and we hope that can continue because of improved security. But there are other parts of Afghanistan that we are not able to reach at all at the moment. For example, the southeastern parts of the country, areas that are still controlled by the Taliban. But even in the north, where there has been some changes, security is a major problem. And that's why we do urgently need security assistance so that humanitarian assistance can go quickly into those areas. Aid workers can also get the protection and the security they need to be able to be on the ground and distribute that assistance to the people who need it most.
Is aid coming in overland now? Is food coming in from Uzbekistan and north of Afghanistan?
Some assistance had come in from Uzbekistan, but that has been stopped in the last 2 days. We hope to restart the transportation of assistance from Uzbekistan using the barges across the river there. But the main route, which is the road that runs from southern Uzbekistan into northern Afghanistan, has not yet been opened, and we hope that would open very quickly.
Is it physically blocked by stones, or is it just a matter of it's not safe?
Uzbekistan has not officially opened it because they continue to worry about the insecurity in northern Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. We have started some limited assistance from Tajikistan into northeastern Afghanistan, and that would continue to supply those areas.
Yusuf Hassan, are there any armed forces currently giving security to UN food convoys going into Afghanistan?
No.
So they're traveling without any armed escort. No wonder they're having trouble. Has the U.S. Refused to give support, or what about U.N. troops?
Well, this is because at the moment there are discussions on the possible solutions, the possible assistance that can be given to Afghanistan. Until some discussions are open with the Afghan people themselves, it is very difficult to see how any military intervention could take place to provide protection to humanitarian workers. I think there is an urgent need for probably a multinational force that can provide not only security to the aid that is going on, but also to the people of Afghanistan, because there are many areas where there has been factional units taking over and not providing the trust and the security that is needed by people.
You seem to be saying that potentially millions of Afghans are in danger of imminent starvation unless a multinational force is put together. Is this a case of people twiddling their thumbs politically while starvation sets in?
I think what is happening is that the rapid changes have taken place in many parts of the country. In some places, there is a vacuum. There are groups of armed people who have been able to take over, and they are not in a position to be able to provide the kind of security that would be required for the massive assistance that needs to go into those areas. We're racing against time, and we urgently need to provide that kind of assistance to stabilize the situation and to provide urgently needed assistance to people who are on the verge of starvation.
This sounds very bleak, given how much turmoil remains inside Afghanistan. What are the real prospects for Afghans cut off from food supplies? Are we at this point almost destined to see large-scale starvation there, or could it still be averted?
Well, I know a lot of food has gone in, and a lot of assistance is going in, but there's need for a push for that food to be distributed as quickly as possible in the areas it is needed mostly. And at the moment, there are some areas, because of security reasons, where that is not happening, and it will take a bit of time. And I think we don't have that luxury, and that's why I think there's an urgent need to assure the security of humanitarian assistance that is going in, as well as the aid workers.
Yusuf Hassan is a spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees. He spoke with me earlier from Islamabad. Growing up in South Dakota during the Depression, George McGovern saw family farms suffer because they could not sell their surplus crops. He remembers starving children in Italy when he served as a bomber pilot during World War II. Hunger is a political condition, McGovern writes. He and former Senator Bob Dole proposed that $5 billion of the $40 billion anti-terrorism program should be spent on alleviating world hunger. His argument, in essence, take away the hunger and desperation that give reason for people to follow terrorist leaders like Osama bin Laden. Is feeding people the answer? Will alleviating hunger in Afghanistan help pave the road to peace? And what can be done in other regions of the world before new conflicts begin? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Joining me now from Stephensville, Montana, is George McGovern. He was U.S. Senator from South Dakota from 1963 to 1981. Most recently, he was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Agencies on Food and Agriculture in Rome. He's author of The Third Freedom, Ending Hunger in Our Time. Welcome, Senator McGovern.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Pleasure.
Also joining us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is special coverage news analyst Jack Beatty, a senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and let me say it's an honor to be on the same program with George McGovern.
Thank you very much, Mr. Beatty.
George McGovern, we want to get into development and hunger and your prescription there, but step back with us for a second first. It is good to talk to you tonight. Give us your thoughts on September 11th and the war we're in now.
Well, I was on a trip to Africa, a food mission for the UN at the time of the September 11th attack. And it was a shock that was almost beyond our conception as the details came in later in the afternoon. I realized that it was an unprecedented experience that the American people were going through. I think the Bush administration has handled it very well. They've gone after the suspected terrorists, but they've done it with restraint. They've done it with careful preparation. And I find no fault with the way they have proceeded from the very beginning of this crisis. I do think that we have to go beyond military actions. I'm not opposed to those actions, but I think we have to go beyond that. And that's why Senator Dole and I have suggested that about $5 billion of that $40 billion Congress authorized for the fight against terrorism be earmarked over the next 5 years dealing with the problems of hunger and poverty around the world.
Senator McGovern, how literal are you in drawing a line between the September 11th act of terrorism and hunger? Do you see that as a cause that lies behind Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda network, or is it a more general connection that you're making here?
Let me put it this way. Osama bin Laden was not hungry. He's a wealthy man. He's an educated man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he has to recruit young men who are willing to carry out these suicide missions, and he has to have a lot of them. He's responsible for some of the financing of the Taliban in Afghanistan. My argument is, and Senator Dole shares this, is that he would have, he and his like would have much greater difficulty recruiting young men who are willing to throw their lives away in a terrorist act if those young men had some hope, if they had some sense of power, if they had enough to eat, if they had a decent job. And so I think we have to attack those problems, not the United States alone, but the whole international community. I don't want to imply for a minute that just feeding people is going to end the danger of terrorism in the world. There are other causes that lie behind this, but one of the big causes would be eliminated if people had enough to eat. And so that's the reason that is behind my thinking.
You've made a very concrete suggestion along with Bob Dole, that is, carve out $5 billion of the hypothetical $40 billion that will go into this war on terrorism. Have you seen any evidence that that's being picked up in Congress or in the Bush administration?
Well, I know it's being considered. I can't give you any evaluation on how far that has gone, but I know that both in the Congress and in the administration, there are people who are considering some kind of initiative like that. Keep in mind that President Bush asked the Congress for $20 billion to fight terrorism. The Congress responded overnight by saying, we'll give you $40 billion.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is, as a longtime member of the Senate, I know a little bit about how that body works.
I guess you do.
And how the executive branch works. If you ask for $20 billion and you get $40 billion, there's a certain amount of room there for utilizing some of that money for purposes other than the specific purpose of combating the terrorists directly. I think they could easily squeeze $5 billion out of that amount, spread it out over the next 5 years at the rate of $1 billion a year, and use it to reduce hunger in the world. I'm talking about expenditures that are above and beyond what we're now doing in that area.
Jack Beatty, George McGovern knows something about how Capitol Hill works. Do you sense that kind of elasticity there and readiness to move beyond the military agenda to a development, even a food aid agenda?
Well, if people were reasonable, I think that's where they would go. The British have already complained that we're backing off some of our humanitarian promises. I don't know. I mean, that $40 billion the senator talks about, a good chunk of that was promised to New York City, and all the stories lately are is New York City isn't going to see that or only going to see a fraction of that. So I'm very worried about the non-military side of this. And I hope that the senator and Senator Dole can be successful in getting the public's attention on what really is the context, not just of terrorism, but of disorder and instability in the world. That is the kind of hopelessness and wretchedness that he was talking about.
We're talking tonight with Senator George McGovern. He was a Democratic presidential nominee in 1972 at the height of the Vietnam War. Now he's most recently author of The Third Freedom, Ending Hunger in Our Time. What do you think? Will solving poverty and hunger solve terrorism? Are you ready to pour some of the resources of the war on terrorism into development and food aid? Do you think the Bush administration is ready to take that kind of step? Join us with Senator George McGovern tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can get into the conversation online at WBUR.org. Click on Special Coverage Forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR Boston. We'll be right back. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're joined tonight by Senator George McGovern. He's talking about hunger in the world and the need to solve it if we want to have a hope of solving terrorism and world disarray. You can join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Are you hearing enough from the Bush administration about faces of the war on terrorism beyond the military face? Do you believe we can fight terror with food? George McGovern, President Bush has talked about freedom from fear as a fundamental motivator in this war on terrorism. You were a U.S. bomber pilot decorated with a Distinguished Flying Cross over Europe in World War II. Do you feel a kinship with the U.S. bomber pilots today, tonight, over Afghanistan? Are the conflicts related at some level?
Yes, they are indeed. What we're responding to in Afghanistan right now is the fact that aggressors that wished us no good came to this country and murdered 6,000 Americans, snuffed out their lives in those attacks on the World Trade Centers and the Pentagon. We had to respond to that, and I think we're doing it in the right way. We're doing it selectively. We're doing it with considerable care. I applaud the fact that the administration dropped food packages over Afghanistan before they released a single bomber to hit any target in that country. Admittedly, that's largely a symbolical gesture, but it was a good symbolical gesture. And I support these pilots and their efforts to break the military strength of the Taliban. Clearly, these bombing operations have driven the Taliban into a smaller part of the country and have taken the capital away from them. So I think that's all to the good.
Senator McGovern, we've had callers on this show concerned about a parallel between Afghanistan and Vietnam. Do you see any parallel there?
I don't see any parallel. In Vietnam, we were the only foreigners involved in that country. It was basically a revolutionary and civil conflict involving one group of Vietnamese against another.
With some Chinese and Soviet support.
Well, some support, but no troops. And it's not even clear how much support flowed in there. Certainly nothing like the military and economic aid we gave to those various governments in the South that we kept trying to plug up. But in the case of Afghanistan, we didn't go to Afghanistan. The Taliban and these terrorists came to the United States and killed innocent Americans. So it's quite a different thing. Furthermore, the administration has been careful not to put large numbers of ground forces in Afghanistan. I think the lessons of Vietnam are so clear that they've been very careful about that, and they have sent in small units of special forces who, for the most part, have been brought in by helicopter and taken out when their mission is done. So I don't see us going down the road of Vietnam in Afghanistan.
We're talking with George McGovern about the war on terror and his campaign, The War on Hunger. How related are they? Do you believe we can fight terror with food? Jack Beatty, let me turn to you for a minute. Hunger springs from poverty, and globalization, defined as openness to trade, is supposed to be the answer to world poverty. You've been looking into this a little bit, Jack. Are poor countries benefiting from globalization? Well, I want to put it to you and then to George McGovern.
No is a short answer. Two recent reports, one from Oxfam, the British charity, and one from the World Bank, make clear that the rules of the road for free trade, which have been rewritten under the WTO, have disproportionately benefited the rich countries and at the expense of the poor countries. For example, in the 1950s, the share of exports in world trade from the 49 least developed countries — these are countries that today have 300 million people in them who live beneath the poverty line — their share of exports in the 1950s was 3%. Today, it is 0.5% is their share of exports. Developing countries lose about $100 billion a year through unfair protectionist subsidies on products in the richer countries.
But, Jack, couldn't that smaller percentage be because the whole pie is growing?
No, but it's also because there, while we have in the 80s, we asked them to liberalize their economies, and half of the and most of the countries in South Asia and Latin America and elsewhere cut their tariffs by half. Meanwhile, in this country and other countries, the tariff barriers we have put on goods from poor countries has been five times higher than the tariff barriers we have for goods from industrial countries. That's on the and meanwhile we give our agricultural producers. I mean, the main way to get out of third world poverty, people say, the rural poverty is through agriculture, the urban poverty is through textile and other labor intensive manufacturing. Well, on the agricultural side, we give we subsidize our agriculture to the tune of $248 billion a year. That's the whole developed West, which is five times what we give in development assistance to the least developed countries. This country alone, which gives a niggling one-tenth of 1% of its of GNP to development aid, we actually negate even that tiny amount by what our trade barriers cost the least developing countries. So you have a situation where the rules of world trade are being applied in what Oxfam calls a hypocritical manner. We're saying to the poor countries, open up your markets to our subsidized agriculture and we'll put your farmers out of business. But meanwhile, your textiles aren't going to get in here and your agricultural products aren't going to get in here. We have a sugar industry in the United States that is subsidized to the tune of half, that is to say, half the income of American sugar producers comes from the government.
George McGovern, I've got to get you in here. Is globalization the enemy?
Well, I think Mr. Beatty has described it exactly in the right terms. I would only add that I think over the long pull, globalization will work, but only if we set down some new guidelines. We can't have a situation where low wages in one country invite the corporate investors to move in there to take advantage of cheap labor. We can't have a situation where they move to countries that have no environmental standards and then compete with the countries that do. And we can't have the kind of discrimination against these developing third world countries that Mr. Beatty's talked about so well. My own view is that globalization is probably inevitable. I think we've been drifting in that direction for a long time. You buy an American Toyota automobile, you find that it was manufactured in Tennessee. The steel comes from Pennsylvania. The rubber tires come from some other part of the world. So we have these multilateral corporations already in place. I think that trend is going to continue, but the fight ought to be not to stop globalization, but to make it equitable for people in the developing countries, which it is not now. And that's why there are 100,000 protesters that congregate every time you have an international conference these days, because people are so fearful of the impact of this global outreach of the developed countries. And it has to be contained. It has to be brought into line by guidelines that are just for people that are too weak to protect themselves.
George McGovern, stand by. We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Do you agree with George McGovern's assessment of what's going on in the world economy today? Are you ready to pour some of the resources of the war on terrorism into development and food aid? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Mark is calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Welcome, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
I do agree generally with what Mr. McGovern's saying, but I have to take issue with one particular point.
Okay.
He talks about the equitable treatment of our country with respect to these third world developing countries, and it's true that there needs to be that kind of equality. But there's a giant omission in his point, which is really related to the distribution and dissemination of these resources that pour out of the United States and mm-hmm. many other Western countries. you have to have an equal footing to begin with. And the governments and the hierarchical power structures that are in place in these places, good examples being the former Taliban, or almost former, and Iraq, are not the types of governments or capitalist or even socialist systems which can facilitate the distribution of wealth, even if it were available in equitable numbers. The numbers that are available now are clearly at the point where we pour so much money over there that many people should be doing much better than they are already. But unfortunately, Saddam has 60-something palaces worth multi-millions each, and that type of example is all over the third world.
We got it, Mark, and it's a good point. What about it, George McGovern? Mark points out the problems structurally in Iraq and Afghanistan, not to mention many other countries. How do you get this development aid out in a way that's effective? And will it really be more effective than the markets?
Well, you can't argue with the gentleman's point. He's absolutely right. Some of the problems throughout the third world would be there even if the advanced countries were doing everything anyone could expect them to do. And the reason is that some of those third world countries, not by any means all of them, have lousy governments that don't give a hang about the well-being of ordinary people. We know that after the collapse of the Soviet Union, that black marketeers took over, syndicates of one kind or another. A lot of the aid that was made available was grabbed by people that had no interest in the development of the former Soviet Union and shipped that money off to banks in Switzerland and other places. So that those problems have to be dealt with. That's not an excuse for the United States and other advanced countries to do less than we're doing. It's a reason for us to work harder in concert with other countries to try to bring about more just and effective governments in those countries. That's a long-term proposition. It's not going to be done easily.
Is it going to require military intervention?
I don't think so. I don't think we have an obligation, or any other country has an obligation, to send in its troops in order to establish a just government. But we can use our aid, and we can use our trade, we can use our diplomacy to put pressure on governments to do some of the things they need to do to lift their own people out of poverty.
We're talking
Senator
with
Senator
Yes,
sorry.
Jack Beatty, please.
I was just going to ask you, Senator McGovern, your old colleague Wayne Morse once, I don't know whether he put it in a bill, but he suggested that we should give aid to countries. We should not give military aid to countries whose GDP was below a certain threshold, basically desperate countries, because he said all they're going to do is spend that money on weapons to keep their people down. What do you think about that idea, Senator?
I think it's a great idea. Unfortunately, and I say this with some embarrassment as a person that loves this country more than life itself, we are the principal arms suppliers in the world today. We sell more arms to poor countries than anybody else. I'd like to see that curtailed. That may come back to haunt us in ways that are going to be very painful. So I think Senator Morse was right about that.
George McGovern, Jack Beatty, stand by. We have callers who want to join the conversation. We're talking with George McGovern about the hunger and poverty behind the conflicts we're facing in the world right now. Can we solve terrorism with economic development and food aid? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Eddie is on the line. Welcome, Eddie. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. McGovern.
Yes.
I'd like to ask you a question here.
Sure.
I'll make an observation. Like you said, almost Osama bin Laden is not a poor man. Neither were his suicide bombers.
That's correct.
They came from Saudi Arabia, which is a very well-to-do country.
Yes.
And has a very fine social safety net for its population.
Yes.
And the young man from Egypt came from a family of very wealthy attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think poverty motivated those people.
Well, maybe.
I think what motivated them was something probably more scary than poverty, because I think we can end poverty.
So what motivated them, Eddie?
A tremendous hatred for the West. In other words, I don't think that they went after us, even because we support Israel. I think they went after us because they don't like Britney Spears' videos.
What about it? Thanks, Eddie, for your call. What about it, George McGovern? It's not just hunger, is it? There is something going on here in terms of a contest of values, a hatred. Do you track all that down to development?
Yes. As I said right at the beginning, you can't single out any one answer and say that's going to end terrorism. I would never argue that just providing enough food for people is going to terminate all terrorism in the world. There are other factors there. There's the problem of religious fanaticism. There's the problem of anti-Western feeling that the gentleman just referred to. There's no doubt that the man who lives in the biggest house on the hill with the most servants and the most wealth, he's going to be the least popular person in town. It's the same way with the United States. We're far and away the wealthiest country in the world. We're the most powerful. We're the most richly endowed. If you're living in a country where 90% of the people are in poverty, even though you yourself may be one of the fortunate few, you are angry about that contrast between great wealth and vast poverty. So I think that our point still stands, that if the United States were perceived as a country that is doing all that it reasonably can with its agricultural abundance to reduce hunger in the world, I think that tends to combat some of the resentment that obviously exists out there towards our country.
George McGovern, we've just got a minute before the break, but how exactly would you do that? Is it as simple as shipping grain abroad? Is there a broader program than that?
Well, you have to have highly skilled people who are trained and experienced to handle this kind of a program. The World Food Program of the United Nations, of which the United States is an important part, and which has an American as its director, a marvelous woman by the name of Catherine Bertini, they have the trained people to do this job. They could be assisted by the non-government organizations like Catholic Relief Services, Lutheran World Relief, the United Joint Jewish Committee, the American Friends, and others. They have the knowledge of how this can be done so that they would minimize the loss, minimize the diversion, and I think we can do this job. I'd begin with the children, with a universal school lunch program, and with something like the American WIC program to provide nutritional supplements for nursing and pregnant mothers and their children.
Globally, can we afford that?
We can afford it. The cost of this would be about $6 billion a year above what is now being done. Of that $6 billion, the United States would pay one-fourth, $1.5 billion. I might add, as an old bomber pilot, that's about the price of one B-2 bomber.
George McGovern, hold it right there. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking with former Senator George McGovern about how hunger may lie behind the conflict we're in right now. What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. You can join the conversation. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight with former U.S. Senator and presidential candidate George McGovern about the war on terrorism and the war on hunger and where they intersect. George McGovern says if we feed the world, we're less likely to face a hostile world. What do you think? How would that work? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bridget is on the line. Welcome, Bridget. Bridget, are you there?
Yeah. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I think this is an amazing program. And my question was, what about going into those countries and working with the people in the third world countries, the underdeveloped countries, and getting them, motivating them to rise up and working with them to help them within their countries, since their government is so corrupt and isn't working for them.
Let's put it to Senator McGovern, and maybe there's some context here, George McGovern. I mean, domestically, Bill Clinton said, you know, we would end welfare as we've known it in the United States. Do we have to have, as Bridget says, new ways of getting in to countries around the world, to motivating, to getting past corrupt and ineffective governments? How do we do that?
Well, of course, you can't go into a country that, whose government just flatly forbids it. You'd have to fight your way in, and there are some governments almost that hostile. But I think the question is a good one. The more we can tailor our food assistance and other forms of aid to self-help projects in those countries, the better. Now, for example, a school lunch program, you might think of that on first blush as a kind of a giveaway. Not so. It's a good school lunch program has been one of the principal development tools right here in the United States. When I was running the Food for Peace program for President Kennedy, I got a call from the University of Georgia from the dean, and he said, "Mr. McGovern, I just want to tell you that I hope you and President Kennedy will not overlook the development of school lunch programs in different countries. The school lunch program," he said, "has done more to encourage the development of the South than any other federal program." So these are not just giveaway programs. These are merged with the educational program. They draw students into the school. Nobody's figured out a better way to get youngsters to school than offering them a good meal every day. So you increase school attendance, the academic performance goes up, and those youngsters that go out into life better equipped to play a constructive role in their own societies. Maybe one of them one day will emerge as the leader of the country. So it's that kind of aid that excites me and that I support.
Jack Beatty, George McGovern's taking the long view here. Put good lunches in the stomachs of school children and wait for them to grow up to be good leaders.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we have to think in terms of the long view. If we have a situation where the developing world is falling further and further behind, while globalization is just making the richer countries even richer, that's a national security problem. That's a defense problem. That isn't just a humanitarian problem. You know, writing in today's Washington Post, Jeffrey Sachs, the development economist, points to what he calls a tragic irony. That is, the rich countries are so rich today, and the poor countries so poor, that even an added few tenths of 1% of GNP could accomplish what he calls what was never before possible in history, ensuring the basic needs for health, nutrition, and education for the poor children of the world. In other words, just a tenth of a percent of GDP contributed by the advanced countries can have that effect on the poor countries. And we, as I say, we give 0.1%. If we gave 0.2%, that would be $10 billion more a year, and it would leverage more money from Europe and Japan. So in a strange way, the immiseration of the third world masses has made a dollar go further there than ever before.
Well, there's the question. Are we thinking big enough in our war on terrorism? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Bob is on the line from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Bob.
How are you? Thank you for hearing me.
Sure.
I must say first, it's a privilege being able to talk to the governor. I hear a lot of talk about Afghanistan and governments and all, but being able to say firsthand of former CIS countries, such as the Ukraine, where a family can live off of 3 loaves of bread in a week because they cannot afford it, I guess I'm kind of fearing that we're throwing a whole lot of money at something when we haven't proven in the past that we're able to sufficiently help countries that we weren't even at war with.
Mm-hmm. George McGovern, what about that? What about the past spotty record of foreign aid efforts, and how can we have confidence that if we should commit to this now, out of all this tragedy, that it will go right?
Well, I know that there have been problems with foreign aid. It's a complicated, difficult process. But let me just cite one very hopeful result of foreign assistance. When I was running for president in 1972, I used to tell audiences that 35% of all the human beings on this planet were suffering from chronic hunger. That was true. one in three, mm-hmm. that were suffering from hunger. Today, thanks to the assistance we have given to countries like India and others that have helped them produce more and that have helped them with their educational process and so on, today only 17% of the world's people suffer from chronic hunger. In other words, we've cut it in half.
That's an encouraging trend.
It's an encouraging trend, particularly when you consider that 30 years ago, we had a series of books coming out called The Population Explosion and so mm-hmm. on, and pointing up how population was outstripping food production. That's no longer true. Thanks to the technical and economic aid that we and other countries have given out across the world, we've increased food production much faster than population growth has increased. I don't mean to minimize the importance of restraining population growth, but simply to say that foreign aid hasn't been a complete failure. We've virtually eliminated a number of diseases around the world thanks to the work of the UN World Health Organization. So we've made some progress in these areas, but there's much more that needs to be done. Mr. Beatty makes the case so well when you consider that our entire foreign aid budget is only 0.1%. Mm-hmm. That's not very high. There are 20 countries in the world that give more of their gross national product to foreign assistance than we do. I don't minimize for a minute the generosity of the American people, but I think we need to challenge them to do even more in terms of helping people work their way out of poverty.
Senator McGovern, stand by. We have a lot of callers who want to come in here. John's calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to sort of voice my support for what Mr. McGovern has been saying. And I think the key thing he said for all of us to hear is that we need to go beyond, you know, just the military solution. Mm-hmm. I think we all feel like there's maybe some holes we got to fix in our intelligence and our military capability, and clearly we sort of regrouped pretty quickly here. But, you know, 10 years ago we thought there would be a new world order, and we're fighting in the Middle East. Now we got 6,000 of our neighbors who are dead, and I think we all have to commit to the thought of what is a pretty wise statement. Let's do the military stuff, but let's go beyond that. And some of the other callers also were somewhat negative, and I really feel that you know, I know in my business, we can work out some of the tactics and the, you know, logistics and all of that, but we need to get our heads beyond the military, make sure this doesn't happen again, and certainly, you know, do what we need to do militarily, but there are other causes for this that I think we can get at.
We appreciate your optimism there, John, in Cleveland, Ohio. Senator McGovern, here's the issue of getting beyond the military response, and I guess many Americans have appreciated the leadership that has been shown in Washington, but there's a feeling of waiting for the other shoe to drop. When will it be time for the United States to show more of its hand about what may be in the cards beyond bombers, special forces?
Well, we have one really critical and urgent problem right now. If we and other countries can't find some way to get large amounts of food into Afghanistan over the next 60 to 90 days, I think that somewhere between 5 and 7 million people could starve to death in that country. And that's the worst possible thing that could happen, not only from the standpoint of humanity, but from the standpoint of our position in the world. I think many Americans would begin to question the bombing campaign if it's not accompanied by a strenuous effort to head off this pending starvation that is going to hit Afghanistan during the winter months. Mm-hmm.
And dropping food from the air is not going to solve that, but yet we heard at the top of the hour from a UN spokesman that their trucks just can't get in because they don't have security. They don't have troops to accompany them. Should U.S. troops be doing that?
We'd probably have to send small units there, but the British also have forces in there. I don't think it takes a lot of troops to protect a supply line like that. And we need to continue to use air power where it's necessary to keep the lines of communication open. You can't do much in food drops from the air other than simply to send a message, to give a kind of a symbolical signal. But we what we need to do is to follow up as soon as we possibly can with the movement of large amounts of food by truck.
Senator McGovern, stand by. Betty's calling from Meadsville, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Betty.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. McGovern, I voted for you in 1972. I was heartbroken when you
lost.
I really think this is something that's needed to be said. I have a daughter in college, and the people of that age are feeling very pessimistic and very overwhelmed because they sort of see this. It makes sense to them that if people are living in poverty and hunger, you know, that it's going to have this sort of a backlash. And I think all we need is the will to feed people, and we need these sustained methods. You mentioned some NGOs, things like aquaculture and a lot of other things that they do to have sustained methods so people can feed themselves. It's not just a matter of pouring a lot of money out there and a big stack of food, you know.
Mm.
But the other thing that you keep saying, and I forget the other man's name.
Jack Beatty.
Yes. About the globalization and the rich countries getting richer, I think we need to recognize it's corporations, you know, corporation A, B, and C, it seems to me, because even in countries that are the Western countries that are well off, there are an awful lot of people who are out of work or not doing that well.
There sure are today. Betty, our time is running down. Betty, I apologize, but thank you for your call. Mm-hmm. George McGovern, there was Betty who voted for you in 1972. Tomorrow, a lot of Americans are going to be gathering for Thanksgiving, talking about the current situation. Betty voted for you, but a lot of Americans didn't at the height of the Vietnam War. Do you think that you're closer to the mainstream view of this war and how we can move beyond a military response? Has the country changed?
Well, I think I am closer to the mainstream. I should tell you that a year after the 72 election, mm-hmm. there were polls coming out where the voters said that if they had a chance to vote over again, I would have won handily.
The whoops factor.
That's right. But I think the more importantly, I do think that this attack of September 11th has brought the American people closer together than I've seen in a long, long time. I think there's less partisanship. I think there's more thoughtfulness. You know, a great tragedy can sometimes bring some benefits in its trail. In this case, it united the country. Secondly, countries that were criticizing us two or three months ago are now offering their sympathy and their help. The third benefit that may come from this is that I think the American people are looking at the world a little more carefully. What is it about this world we live in that has reminded us of how insecure we are? Maybe that will lead us to some better answers than we have had in the past about what our role in the world should be.
George McGovern, we're out of time, but we thank you for joining us tonight on the evening of the holiday, of the eve of the holiday. It's great just to hear your voice, and it's a comfort. George McGovern's most recent book is The Third Freedom, Ending Hunger in Our Time. Thanks very much for being here, Senator.
Thanks ever so much for the opportunity.
And Jack Beatty, thanks as always for being with us.
Thank you, and thanks, Senator McGovern.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR.